Would you pray with me? Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be acceptable. Well, here we are in the fifth Sunday in Lent. We move further and further down that rocky, twisted, confusing road as we follow Jesus toward that appointment with the cross in Jerusalem. And we find ourselves this morning deep in the heart of Lenten darkness. We've come to that part of the journey where the darkness is so heavy that it's difficult to see the road before us. It's difficult to imagine the hope that lies out there. So long have we been on this journey. So steeped have we been in the darkness. And out of that, though, we hear this voice calling to us, one of these other pilgrims on these songs of ascent, as he makes his weary, dark way to Jerusalem for the Passover, and we make ours for Easter. And out of the darkness, this is what he says: when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. We were like those who dream. And then our mouth was filled with laughter. Out of the darkness comes this reassurance: when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion. That's at the end of the journey. And the dream awaits. But the journey does. It grows long and arduous, doesn't it? It's a lot of penitence, a lot of repentance, a lot of looking in, a lot of being dissatisfied with what you see. But we see ourselves as we do this, and we see our lives with a growing Lenten honesty. We see where we have failed. We see where integrity has been lacking. But we also see our hearts reaching out, stretching up, embracing Jesus Christ in newer, deeper ways. And out of that, we hear this voice of the prophet from 800 years ago crying out to God, "Comfort, comfort my people," says Isaiah, as he blesses God's people in their Babylonian exile. These words echo over the eons, and they come to us in our exile here now. Guilt and pain increases, but promise remains. Christ will ultimately restore our fortunes, as he did that of Israel. We need but trust him. We need but follow him. We need but be convicted that that cross of his will do the job that it does. The psalmist is our partner in this ascent to the cross, and he gives us hope. And he outlines this journey in three movements. I think it's important to point them out, so let me just belabor them a little bit. On one hand, the first two verses, listen to them. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, "The Lord has done great things for them." That's our history. The Lord has done great things for them, right? The likely referent to all of this was the exile to Babylon. A tragic, terrible, terrifying thing for those folks. But those first two verses recall deliverance. On the other hand, the psalmist simultaneously prays for help in his future ongoing needs in verses 4 and 5. He says, "Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy." So on one hand, we have a reflection of the past. On the other hand, we have a look into the future, a vision. And right in the middle, in the very center, we find our present circumstances. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad, says the psalmist very simply. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. The words on one side of this central statement, you see, are in the past tense, and the words on the other side are in the future tense. Present gladness, we're told, is not a fleeting emotion. It has a past and it has a future. And they're rooted in God's actions in our lives. Our entire life, past, present, and future, is embraced by the God we worship. And at the end, we come to verse 6, and it expresses confidence that God will lead us home again. Listen to it. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. That's the promise. That's the promise of the psalmist. That was the promise of the exile in Babylon. And that's the promise for those of us staggering down this Lenten road. God will lead us home again to our Easter home. This is this move that we've talked about, those of you that have been in the class on Wednesday night, from orientation, where we are settled and all things look fine, to disorientation, where everything is unsettled and unsure, and back to reorientation, a new orientation that is now more fully aware of God and God's blessings. The psalmist outlines that for us. That is our journey. God is taking us from our old lives and our old selves on this Lenten journey, and he is disorienting us. He's taking us out of our comfort zones so that he can move us into a new place of God awareness, a new place of God blessedness, a new place of God thankfulness. As I said, that the likely referent for this was this exile from Babylon. However, here's what happened. When they were returned to the promised land, it didn't live up to their expectations. Only a few of them came back, and the land was troubled and torn apart, and they were persecuted. It was a difficult time for them. And hence we get this prayer in verse 4, which is a request for Yahweh to repeat his saving activity. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. The Negev is a huge, dry, waterless desert. We are parched. We are parched on our journey. We need renewing as if we've been in the Negev. And often that is the way it is with God's people. We need that living water to be poured into us. And so this is a good place to look again at that promise of Deuteronomy 30 that you heard just a few minutes ago. Here's a little bit of it. Return to the Lord your God, you and your children, and obey his voice in all that I command you today with all your heart, with all your soul. Then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have mercy on you. Restore your fortunes. The same language this psalmist uses, the same deep desire that we have on this Lenten journey. Restore our fortunes, O Lord. Take us to Easter again. All this suggests, and this is what I came here to tell you, all this suggests that the people of God in all places and all times must live by both memory and hope. One fuels the other. The life of faith binds together tears and joy. We see that in this psalm in verses 2, 5, and 6. He talks about laughter and shouts of joy. The life of faith binds together hurt and hope. We all know that, don't we? The life of faith binds together suffering and glory. We see that. We see that so clearly in the transit of Jesus Christ. In New Testament terms, we are people of the cross and of the resurrection as well. Pain and joy. Now, this recognition of the neediness and the weeping in the Psalms support us as we face the suffering that's endemic to this earthly life. and especially on the Lenten journey. I was reminded as I was thinking about this message of a song from the 80s. I don't know if you remember the band REM, Came and Went All Too Quickly, really talented. But they had a great song called Everybody Hurts. And it goes like this. When your day is long and the night is yours alone. When you're sure you've had enough of this life, well, hang on. Well, hang on. Don't let yourself go because everybody cries and everybody hurts sometimes. So hold on, 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 because everybody hurts. Hold on, hold on. That's the message of the psalmist. As those called to take up our cross and follow, we need to acknowledge this, that suffering is a normal part of human life. Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. And if suffering is a normal part of human life, suffering for love's sake is a Lenten experience and is the mark of godly commitment and Christian faithfulness. Which takes us to the psalm's conclusion. The final verses acknowledge that harvest always follows the seed time, which reflects back to some other Old Testament texts. Genesis 8:22, for instance. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Seed time shall not cease. And it also reflects that God always restores his own. Psalm 30, verse 5 says, weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Restoration awaits. We will be taken home again. It's clear in Psalm 126 that he who wrote it and they who sang it were no strangers to the dark Lenten side of things. And in this, they serve us as mentors. In this, this psalm becomes important to us. It becomes critical to us. It becomes reassuring to us. They are our mentors. They carried the painful memory of exile in their bones and the scars of oppression on their backs. They knew deserts of the heart. They knew nights of weeping. They knew what it meant to sow in tears. But if they are honest in their pain with us, so they are also in their sharing of joy. And this is the part that I really want you to hear. This is the part that's so important to us at this point in this Lenten season. This is the part that lifts us up, gives us strength, moves our feet forward. It seemed like a dream, that return from exile. It seemed like a dream when God returned them. Each act of God was an impossible miracle, a small Easter in and of itself. Unbelievable. There was no way it could have happened, but it did. There was no way it could have happened, but God made it. The people, according to the psalmist, were like those who dream. A dream which seemed too good to be true, but which was, in fact, the reality. They were returned. As Christ followers, we nurture these memories of laughter, these shouts of joy. We fill our minds with the stories of God's acts. Joy has a history. Joy is a verified, repeated experience of those involved in what God does with us and for us and through us and to us, what God is up to in our world, in our lives. Joy is our birthright as children of God. Weeping tarries for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Good Friday lasts but a day. Easter lasts all year long. Psalm 126 shows memory and hope to be inseparable. Together, they become grounds for genuine gratitude. Present distress is no argument for the denial of Yahweh's power or his grace. And as he has reversed the calamitous past, so can he be relied upon to reverse a painful present. So if that's where you find yourself this morning, in a painful present, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Everybody hurts. Everybody hurts. But God redeems. Seeds of hope we plant will be watered with tears to produce a fruit of a joyful future. A future which will take us home. That's what the psalmist says, that we'll be taken home. Home to God. Home to God again. A future which will Easter us once more. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter. Amen. Let us take a moment in silence to listen to what the Spirit may be saying to each of us.